the past 2 weeks, a few other union members and I, we've rallied together to try to question this process. And we have applied to be on the bylaws committee in our union. We have people who have applied to be on the budget committee as well. And there's still, some questions in the air because currently the president needs to appoint people to these committees. So it doesn't feel super democratic, but there's hope. And we're learning about the different ways that we can organize. And we're asking questions of people who are in other teachers' unions, like, and looking at their bylaws and saying, how do things work over there? Does that work? Did it bomb? And so since we've decided to organize within our own union, it has been so heartening to find out through DSA's educator group that people are just willing to drop almost everything and talk to us immediately and give us some advice. We just recently had a social with members of a caucus in North Clackamas. Yesterday, I just met with a couple of leaders who are board directors in Salem-Keizer. And we're just sharing ideas and pumping each other up. We need hype people around us. So I would recommend just reaching out to other unions, not necessarily the ones in your area. Join the DSA. If you're an educator, go to the DSA Educators Meetup. You're not alone. You might feel like the weirdo in the room where everyone's rolling their eyes at you, but there are other people out there just like you, and they're willing to do the work with you.
Yeah, find the people that will have people's eyes rolled at you together or something. I don't know. Like Claire and I get people's eyes rolled at us together a lot, I think, lately, and it's been nice. I would say, yeah, just like y'all said, like unionize, join your union, reform your union. What's the other one we said? Join Democratic Socialists of America. But also, and this is something I've been like thinking about a lot, it's like we really all need to talk to our neighbors more and make sure that we all have a plan for responding to emergencies, like from a climate crisis or emergencies that come from the inevitable fall of capitalism. And the, like what are we going to do when we can't, when our ways of getting food and our basic needs radically shifts because of the, what's it called, supply chain? I forget what it's called. So that's also, I think, a big thing I'm trying to be a little bit more intentional about, is talking to my neighbors and like, how can I provide food to people in my community? How do we build these aid infrastructures to hold each other together, because we can't rely on the government, right?
All right. Well, that wraps it up for this evening's show. You've been listening to Tammy Carpenter, Beaverton School Board member, plus Claire Renaud and Ellen, activists in the Beaverton Education Association. Thanks to my co-host, Laura Wadlin. I'm Jamie Partridge. This is Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Do you need some quiet mood music? Some soothing sounds?
Well, then never listen to Life During Wartime, because they just play really obnoxious DIY punk from local bands and international acts. Sometimes they have bands play live, and it's all with the yelling and the screaming and the, I don't like my mom and dad or my teachers and all that kind of stuff. That's Life During Wartime, every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening. You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we're talking with Justin Mashouf and Hamza Furkani. Welcome to Prison Pipeline. In the film 1774, a young filmmaker follows the transformative journey of a former gang member incarcerated since the 1980s, when an act of compassion for the people of Gaza amidst prison walls sparks a viral movement of solidarity and hope. Justin and Hamza, please tell us more about the film and tell us about yourselves.
Hello, everyone. I'm Hamza Furkani, and I'm pleased to be here on the show. I'm grateful for the invitation and looking forth for the discussion.
What, a little bit about yourself?
So, a little bit about me. I'm a former gang member. Spent most of my life incarcerated as a juvenile and as an adult. Right now, I'm currently in college, taking up personal training certification with an ACE program that will lead to a state certification. And I'm also, for the fall and for the summer, back to addiction studies, working on my AA, social science and behavior.
And my name is Justin.
Well, congratulations.
And thank you. And my name is Justin Mashouf. I'm a filmmaker based here in Los Angeles. I've met Hamza while he was incarcerated. And in 2008 or 2009, we started a correspondence through a mutual friend who was a community leader in the south central area of LA. And at the time, I was doing research for a documentary on incarcerated Muslims. So Hamza was one of those early, we'll call them research subjects. And I finished the film that I was working on in 2019 that was released called The Honest Struggle. And it focused on a Muslim brother coming home from incarceration in Chicago, also a former gang member. That film was released on Amazon Prime. And when the genocide began in October of 2023 in Palestine, in Gaza specifically, Hamza reached out to me and wanted to give a donation. And I absolutely accepted that donation, gave on his behalf for the people of Gaza, decided to post about it on the on Twitter and on Instagram, and it went around the world very quickly.
So, Justin, what do you think it is about the short that you made? What do you think it was that caused it to gather so much virtual attention?
Yeah, I mean, initially when I had received the donation, I thought it was a kind gesture, but it really didn't hit me until I saw the work log in which he had worked for a full month at 13 cents an hour, right? Which many of us would consider slave wages. And the fact that he knew that he would be released in the following months and he needed as much money as, you know, as he could get for his reentry. And he just gave it so selflessly. So I think so many of us just watching the social media posts and just the tragedy and the travesty that we see coming out of Gaza, we feel so hopeless. We feel so destroyed for the hope of humanity. And we've all just kind of been idle witnesses to this in many ways. And to see somebody like Hamza, who had no power, who was thrown away by society, give everything that he had, I think it gave us all a spark of hope for the future. And that's why everybody wanted to share this. And that's why everybody wanted to give back to him, because it was such a beautiful gesture. I think that was what made it so unique, that literally, you know, it was seen by millions of people, shared by thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, and over 3,000 people donated to him to raise over $100,000 in just about one day.
Wow, that's amazing. So what happened to that $100,000, Justin? Did that all go to Hamza?
Yeah, that went to Hamza's reentry fund, and he's used it in this subsequent year to establish himself in Los Angeles, put himself in, you know, enroll himself in college, and now he has his own apartment.
Wow. So Hamza, tell me, What motivated you to send that check to Justin? It sounds like you were friends before he made the film.
Yes, we were and we are. Well, actually, our relationship is much more deeper and more profound now than before. So there are several factors that propelled me or led me to that. Empathy, brotherhood, finding my humanity, and seeking personal redemption. I was just stunned that morning when I heard the breaking news, especially where I was at, you know, inside the prison dining room, well, doing my job, passing out breakfast. No water, no light, and electricity.
And you're referring to the statements from
the news that broke out.
Right, the Israeli prime minister or the minister of defense, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That light, you know, the basic necessities of life, you know, were denied these people.
Yeah. Electricity, gas, and water.
And water, you know, yes, yes. And myself being incarcerated, let me say, rightfully for the crime that I committed, I'm afforded these basic necessities every day. Water, electricity, blankets, sheets, three meals, basic, but you know, three meals. Without disciplinaries, I'm afforded monthly canteen and packages, visits, you know, but back to the basic necessities of life. And I thought about my grandson. At this time, he was 1 year old. So seeing the children there just devastated, hungry and thirsty, defenseless, having no means, nobody to stand up for them, nobody to help them, defend them, speak up for them. My grandson was foremost in my mind there in that occupied zone. And though this is not a religious thing, you know, I am a Muslim. And those are my brothers and my sisters. And being a Shia Muslim, more than anything, without having to go into the history of this, it can be Googled and you can learn about it yourself and those listening, I thought about the grandson of Prophet Muhammad and his great-grandchildren, who not too far from Palestine in Iraq, close to the city, goes to the Euphrates River, were denied water. So it was not sympathy, it was empathy. You know, there's a difference in between the two. You can sympathize with a thing or with a person and not do absolutely nothing. But once you have empathy, then you place yourself in those circumstances. You feel the pain. You feel the hunger. You feel the thirst. You're homeless, defenseless. So it was all those factors that moved me to do that.
Thank you. So, Justin, that's very compelling and it's very moving. You must have been moved when you heard that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've really wasn't planning on making a project out of Hamza's life, because, you know, for a multitude of factors. But when this essentially incident happened and the world reacted in such a incredible way, really in some ways my wife really pushed me. She just like took my phone away from me and started filming me because I was getting calls from journalists. I had been talking to Hamza on the phone. She was like, "You're doing this no matter if you want to do it or not." And because the world is reacting, right, to this story. And so, you know, I believe it was very, you know, serendipitous that how all of this happened. And now, you know, we're taking this special opportunity to shed light on not just, you know, Hamza's story, but the people of Gaza who have been essentially in an open air prison for years. And now they're undergoing an absolute modern genocide, and what I'm sure will be remembered by history as a modern Holocaust. we're taking this unique opportunity, this unique angle of seeing the overlapping and the intersection of mass incarceration and the story of occupied people and oppressed people in Palestine.
Justin, how many Hamzas do you think there are out there who have a similar kind of story?
So many. I mean, I was, you know, at an early age, exposed to the story of Malcolm X and read the autobiography of Malcolm X, and it absolutely shattered my any illusions that I had about the United States of America at a very young age. And the fact that, you know, especially since the 1980s and the time period in which Hamza was incarcerated, you know, you have the so-called war on drugs, which was responsible for incarcerating, you know, hundreds of thousands of people for ridiculous charges. You know, Hamza's charge was murder, but he was 17 years old at the time. He was essentially took a plea deal, understanding that he would most likely be charged as a minor, but they decided that he was unsuitable to be charged as a minor and charged him as an adult. So they bait and switched him with that plea deal. And then he ended up doing 39 years, in which the initial sentence, if I'm not mistaken, Hamza, was 15 years to life, right? So they essentially, and to make things even worse, he kept getting denied parole. And it wasn't until some generous community members helped pay for a private attorney to work on his case, right? Which many, many, many incarcerated people cannot afford that, right? Cannot afford a private attorney to represent them in their parole hearings. Now, so there's probably thousands of people like Hamza that have turned themselves around, who have rehabilitated themselves, not even to mention the people that are incarcerated wrongly, right? Who have people who have never even committed a crime, but were wrapped up and thrown, you know, head first into a system that was essentially built against them. And Hamza, if, you know, you have anything to add to that, please do, because you've lived this experience.
So to add to that question, there are, you know, there are 33 prisons in California, over 150,000 to 170,000 incarcerated people throughout the state of California. There are thousands of us. So there are always charity sales inside of prisons where it would be for domestic violence, for missing children, for the homeless, and they would sell like baked goods or chickens or candy, you know, so it would be an opportunity for us to give back to society and as well get some, you know, some outside goodies, you know. So to answer the question, there are thousands of guys like myself, or even better, you know, that give what they can or what they have to help others out. When you're incarcerated, you know, when you're incarcerated, you know, it's like being on a slave ship, you know, on a plantation. You lose a sense of, well, your oppressor tried to take away the sense of who you are, but you actually become more in tune with who you are, and you find your potentialities. You really find out who you are. Look at Malcolm, you know? What he did before he was in prison, and his personal and ethical and moral transformation to become a world leader, recognized throughout the world. In February 1989 was when I first read the autobiography of Malcolm X. February of 1989, so maybe like 21. And it was mind-blowing. It still is, you know. I read that book throughout the year like I would read the Quran and the Bible. It's mandatory reading. And it opened my world to my intellectual world, my moral world, you know? It caused me to question myself. What was I doing with my life? Where was my life going? And what contributions I can make if I was to find the internal courage to turn myself around? Because that's what Malcolm did. You know, he had the moral fortitude to redirect his life. He had a moral compass. And I had abandoned my moral compass. I gave up my moral compass. So that book helped me to redirect my life. Not right away, you know, but step by step by step. I began evolving after reading that book. And it led me to the most beautifulest thing, the greatest, the best thing that I've kind of done was to be in a Muslim. It introduced me to Islam, where I really found more of myself. I became in touch with my humanity to be able again to empathize. You know, in prison, there's so much racism, especially in California. There's structured racism. Blacks live with blacks, white live with whites, Hispanics live with Hispanics, Asian Americans with Asian Americans. And I was aware of racism, but I became more of a racist and practiced racism inside of the state of California prisons. Where you learn to hate a human being or to despise a human being simply because they're different from who you are. And after reading Malcolm X's book and the letter that he wrote when he made his Hajj about the cure for racism in America and throughout the world, where you accept a difference of opinion or a difference of color and you embrace a person because of their humanity. It's a beautiful letter that Malcolm wrote, his experience of at the blessed city of Mecca, making his Hajj. The rainbow of humanity, the complexity of humanity, the different shades of humanity, of human brotherhood. That's why we have to support our oppressed brothers and sisters in Palestine and throughout the world. This is not about what I did. What I did was for them. What I did was for them because they needed that help. They need much more of that help. The revolution must continue because that's what it's about. Revolutionary changes. It's about the continuation of the struggle. The struggle for freedom. The struggle against the system of oppression, of apartheid. There's a new apartheid regime that's accepted by the democratic societies of this world. Tax dollars pay for it. And people are turning a blind eye to the worstest form of oppression. Americans today are being marginalized if they speak out in support of the oppressed in Palestine. And imagine that.
Yeah.
The founding fathers gave Americans, Catholics, Protestants, evangelicals, the Irish back then, the Turks back then, they gave Americans the right to express their religious and political ideas. And today, there's a regime here that are reversing the rights of Americans for supporting the oppressed and for identifying the oppressor. That's an American right. That's the right that the founding fathers given every American.
Hello, you're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBO Community Radio. We're talking today with Justin Mashouf and Hamza Farkhani about the film 1774, which was a story about when Hamza was incarcerated and he sent a check of $17.74. And Justin ended up making a film out of it based on how inspiring it was for somebody to take the wages of being paid so little money and then to dedicate that toward the a cause of the Palestinian people. So I've got about 5 or 6 minutes left in the program, and I want to make sure that if there's anything else that we want to get to, that you have a chance to talk about it.
Yeah, thank you. You could follow the film. It's at 1774film.com. We're going to be posting updates. You can join our newsletter. We were hoping to do more screenings in different cities across the country, specifically the East Coast. We would love to come to the Pacific Northwest as well. And if you'd like to reach us, our contact is on that site. It's 1774film.com. And you can also find me on Instagram. It's J Mashouf, M-A-S-H-O-U-F. Hamza, is there anything that you're working on for your future and, you know, kind of what you want to do with the rest of your life?
Yes. You know, again, back to college, completing my A, graduating, earning my degree, social science, and then a master's. So that's what I'm working on, you know, to be able to get back to my community. So today, there are industries, rehabilitative industries are using many of the former incarcerated. There's a term to call now lived experienced, you know. So I want to use my lived experience in a professional way to be able to help out my community and at the same time pay bills. You know, that's what rehabilitation is about, right? Being a productive citizen, working, clocking in, clocking out, and paying bills, bank accounts, taking care of grandchildren, and just experiencing life. Don't forget about the people of Palestine and the other oppressed throughout the world. Those in Nigeria, the African continent, those in Europe continue to struggle.
Hamza, have you had a chance to make a Hajj? Is that something that you're going to do?
God willing, I have not made it yet. But that is the first priority.
So, Hamza, are you currently on parole?
That's a requirement, yes. For everyone who is released from California State Prison, parole, yes, is a requirement.
Yeah. So you're currently
on parole? Yes, I'm still currently on parole.
So that means that you can't take a Hajj until your parole ends?
Yes, not until that is completed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a complete citizen.
So I just wanted to tell you that... you know, when you were talking about the autobiography of Malcolm X, that, you know, that was, for me, that was one of the most moving books I've ever read in my life. And it was so wonderful to hear that story. It sounds like we're about the same age. I mean, I remember reading it when I was 19 or 20, and it just really changed my life. It's such a beautiful book. It's so inspiring. So thank you for sharing that. So Justin, tell me what's coming up next for you. What's
my current projects? I'm working on another documentary with my producing partner. We have a production company called Stay Focused Pictures. We work primarily in documentaries, but also, you know, documentary kind of style, branded content. We're working on a film about a African-American GI whose ex-wife abducted his children from him for 14 years, and he was able to recover the children. So we're working on that as a documentary and also as a narrative film. So stay tuned about that. We're hoping to, you know, get to the next level on that film in, by early next year.
Well, Justin and Hamza, it's been so great having you on Prison Pipeline today. Hamza, you're able to tell an amazing story, and I just think it's so moving the way that you're able to connect the suffering of the people of Palestine with the issue of mass incarceration, and you know, your story is a story of liberation, and it's a story of hope. And Justin, you've done an amazing job by you know, using your tools as a filmmaker to help tell this story, and it's just been such an honor to have you both on Prison Pipeline today, and I really want to thank you for being on the show. And I'd also ask you to tell us one more time, how can people find out more about the film? If they'd like to learn more about it, where can they go?
It's 1774film.com. And I'm also on social media, Instagram, JMASHOUF, J Mashouf, Twitter, AKA X, is just Mashouf, MASHOUF.
Great. Well, Hamza, Justin, thanks so much for joining us today on Prison Pipeline.
Thank you, Emma.
Thank you, Emma. Have a good day.
Thanks so much for listening today to Prison Pipeline. It is our fundraising season, and so I just want to share with you this quick message about why you should support KBOO Community Radio. Hi, this is Emma. At KBOO, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KBOO want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KBOO supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.